Just 1 week until we play real regular season football, and no better place to start than opening night, the Bucks and the Cowboys. We're going to hear from our crew about what they are watching for in this game. And first up is Adam Schefter.
Well, Phil, we've got 7 days until the man with seven rings, Tom Brady, launches his defense for another Super Bowl title. Tampa Bay returns all its starters, returns all its coordinators, returns all its players, all its coaches, as it goes all in on a title defense that begins 1 week from tonight against the Dallas Cowboys.
Yep, and I'm never going to start a football season off without talking about the trenches. And that's what this game is going to be about, babyface Yates. It's going to be, can Dallas offensive line with their guys back hold up against Tampa Bay's pass rush? And will they be able to clear some room with Big Vita Vea in the middle of that Tampa defense so Zeke Elliott can get going?
You like this, Marcus, a wide receiver paying close attention to a defense. When you think about Michael Parsons, Trayvon Diggs, Lawrence on the defensive side, Jalen Smith, they've got to retool this thing if they plan on making any noise whatsoever in the NFC. They can do it if they Dan Quinn and company put it all together.
To borrow a line from Bart Scott, we cannot wait. As we welcome you into NFL Live, and you've already heard their voices. From left to right, we have Keyshawn Johnson. You heard Adam Schefter. You also heard Marcus Spears far right, and there is the man, the great Mel Kiper Jr., who joins us live on NFL Live. I am Field or Babyface Yates. We start in Chicago as the Bears have remained steadfast in their commitment to Andy Dalton as their week one starter, despite trading up for Justin Fields in the first round of this year's draft. Here's more from GM Ryan Pace, who reiterated the team's stance once more.
I just feel like we're just in a good position with Andy. You know, it starts with how we feel about Andy, and we're very confident in him and where he's at. So there's no need for us to rush Justin. Playing quarterback in the NFL, there's so much that goes into that, you know, and so much different than you'd even see in the preseason. Just the weekly preparation, seeing NFL defenses in the regular season, and all those things. And I just think the more time he has to learn that and observe that, the better off for him.
While the Bears may feel confident about Andy Dalton right now, there might be some concerns when the season actually begins. Over the last two regular seasons, Dalton has heavily struggled under pressure, ranking 33rd or worse in QBR, interception rate, and sack rate. That won't be an issue if Chicago's offensive line can give him protection, but that wasn't the case this preseason, as Dalton was pressured on 35% of his small sample size of dropbacks. So, Key, we'll start with you. A lot of the public may not be so confident, but how confident are you in Andy Dalton as the Bears' starting quarterback?
I think I'm confident for a short sample size. If I'm a veteran player in a locker room, I certainly have the ability to understand what Andy Dalton could bring to the table for us. Okay, he doesn't have to be the long-term answer. We've seen in this league guys like Andy Dalton have a short rebirth within their careers. You run the football, you play defense, and you allow him not to make the mistakes. You don't put him in a position to turn the football over. Yes, people are suspect about the offensive line, but let me take you a little bit inside of an offensive line room. Protection schemes in the preseason mean absolutely nothing. They can correct those things in the regular season. It's not the physicality of the players, in my opinion. It's the scheme. When you're trying to figure out things in the preseason, you kind of play with things until you get to the regular season. Much like Pace said, he understands what the regular season is all about. We'll see. I'll discount last year with the Dallas Cowboys. I won't hold him to all of those bad mistakes that they made.
Listen, man, y'all all know how I feel about the decision. I think Justin Fields should start. But since we passed that and we're talking about Andy Dalton with the Chicago Bears, I see week four being a potential spot when Justin Fields takes over, and that's against the Detroit Lions, and we'll have enough of a sample size of Andy Dalton. I don't know about, this whole resurgence of Andy Dalton, by the way. He got kicked out of Cincinnati, but I guess, look, I guess I watch football different. Anyway, let's get to the point. The point is, when you look at the Chicago Bears football team, which was a playoff team last year with not really good quarterback play, and if the ideology is we gonna protect Justin Fields behind because our offensive line is bad, I've heard that thrown around. I don't know why you would not have an athletic guy behind an offensive line if you're trying to win, but that's a whole nother conversation for another day. But if Andy Dalton can do anything better than he's done in the last 2 or 3 years, not just talking about when he was in Dallas, then Chicago may go 2-2, or they may be, I don't even see 3-1. I'm going to just be honest with y'all. Eventually, week four, when they go up and play the Detroit Lions, I think that's when we'll see Justin Fields. Look, I'm not here to kill Andy Dalton. I'm not here to say Andy Dalton can't have a good 1 or 2 weeks in the NFL. But I'm not just on last year alone with Andy Dalton in Dallas. I want to remind everybody that Andy Dalton was the Cincinnati Bengals franchise quarterback, and they got rid of him. And you don't get rid of franchise guys that can play at a playoff level to bet on something else when he's already in the building. So it's more for me than just what he did in Dallas. That was a bad situation. That would have been a bad situation for any quarterback. And this is going to be a bad situation for Andy Dalton eventually when they got to pull him and put Justin Fields in and try to win some damn games.
The prevailing thought is it's a matter of when, not if, Justin Fields becomes a starter. But I want to introduce Mel Kiper Jr. into this conversation, who leading up to the draft, you were all in on Justin Fields right behind Trevor Lawrence. Mel, specific to the Chicago situation, how ready is Justin Fields to be a starter, maybe as soon as the first couple of weeks of the season?
I think their plan's great. I think letting him sit and do what Patrick Mahomes did and redshirt for that first year and let Alex Smith go out there and have success and get him to the playoffs, it worked fine, right? Here, the plan is to do the same thing. Andy Dalton goes out, you win, you get to the playoffs, and Justin Fields watches. But those are the best laid plans. This team's not prepared for that. Their offensive line is a big issue. Andy Dalton's always needed a lot of talent around him. He's not a quarterback who can win games. He needs everything around him to be working. That happened in Cincinnati those first 5 years when he had success. When the personnel base declined, his performance declined, okay? So you have a situation with the Cincinnati Bengals coming in there, right, in week 2. Detroit Lions in week 4, as Marcus said. There's some pivotal spots there where you better win. You got to be no worse than 2-3, maybe 3-2, but probably more 2-3. Then you got the Packers to be 2-4. At some point, because of the problems they have on the offensive side of the ball, they're not winning enough games. They're going to have to go to Fields. I don't think he's ready. I think he talked about the preseason. It's slower. Now, that's preseason against a lot of guys who aren't in the NFL right now. Okay, now you get the real deal. That was the fresh soft JV. Now you're getting the varsity. So I would say get ready for a lot of issues. But I think it's unfortunately the best laid plans are going awry and Fields is going to be in there when their plan is probably not to have him out there.
So here's always my issue with the whole Patrick Mahomes and Alex Smith thing, because this infrastructure is nothing like it was in Kansas City. All right, the Kansas City was already on a trending up direction. And Alex Smith was the first overall pick who had success, who had been a Pro Bowler and won 11 games during that season. So, yeah, that time was available to not see what Patrick Mahomes had. That time was available because you had a lot of faith in the structure there in Kansas City. This is not the same situation. And look, I've been on enough shows arguing about if Justin Fields should start, if he should start week 1. Yeah, I get it. I understand. I'm week 1 Justin Fields. Ain't nothing changing my mind about that. He's not going to be out there week 1, so fine. But the bottom line is this, man. The better football player at quarterback for the Chicago Bears that gives them the best chance to win is Justin Fields. And how do we absolve Matt Nagy of the responsibility of having Justin Fields ready when he knows that his talent lends itself to them being a better football team right off the bat? But y'all go with that and let him
go out there and have
this resurgence of what he's supposed to do for the Chicago Bears.
A couple games ain't going to hurt him. A couple games ain't going to hurt him. Let's see what Andy Dalton can do for a couple games. I'm with you. The best player is Justin Fields. But let's just see what Andy Dalton can do.
And, of course, that first game, by the way, against the Los Angeles Rams in primetime in Los Angeles.
That's your maturity, Key. That's you and Mel maturity in strong.
We don't have too many rules here on NFL Live, but one of them is when we have Shefty on the show, we have to get the latest news from around the league. And, Shefty, let's get started with some rare good news these days in Indianapolis.
Yeah. All right, babyface, let's go to Indianapolis. Let's go to Carson Wentz, who was activated off the reserve COVID list today. He is expected to resume practicing, and he believes he's on track to play in week 1 against Seattle, which, after all the summer drama, surrounding Carson Wentz. That would be a major win for the Indianapolis Colts going into the season, having Wentz in the starting lineup for the regular season opener. Meanwhile, the Buccaneers head coach Bruce Arians today said that the Buccaneers are 100% fully vaccinated. Coaches, players, everyone's bought in. Everyone's gotten vaccinated. And in a season where every team is looking for any type of competitive advantage it can get, Bruce Arians has found one in the vaccination rate of the defending Super Bowl champs. And, of course, the Week 1 matchup between the Saints and Packers has been moved to Jacksonville because of Hurricane Ida and all the effects there. The Saints are practicing at TCU right now. They will fly back to Jacksonville next week, where Jameis Winston will make his first start as the Saints quarterback in the home of the Jacksonville Jaguars as they get ready to host the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, it certainly has been a tough couple of weeks in New Orleans. We're thinking about everybody in that region, and thousands affected by Hurricane Ida urgently need support. Donate at redcross.org/ESPN to help the Red Cross respond to and help people recover from this disaster.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
It's a sincere pleasure to have the man who is the NFL draft, Mel Kiper Jr. joining us throughout the show today. And Mel, it's never, ever too early to look ahead, which you have done with your first big board for the 2022 NFL draft. Mel, let's dive right into your top three prospects. And I should note, these are your top three prospects for right now. Let's start at number three.
Number three is Derek Stingley Jr. out of LSU. He was a freshman, 6 interceptions, 9 pass breakups, a lockdown corner, great versatility, best since Patrick Peterson. Patrick Peterson was number one on my board when he came out. Never had a cornerback go number one, though, but on rating, Patrick Peterson was there. I thought Derek Stingley Jr. could be there at number one. Then he fell back as a sophomore last year. No picks. Beaten some. Now this is the year to bounce back, revert back to that freshman form. If he does, he's going to be certainly one of the first players selected. Maybe not number one. We never had a cornerback, but he's going to go very high. The guy who could maybe go number one because he's a quarterback is Spencer Rattler from Oklahoma. You watched him early last year. He looked like a late rounder. Yeah, watched him the last 7 games, looked like a top 5 pick. And if he can build on that with the multiple tight ends, H-backs, with the strong running game, Oklahoma, I think, has a chance to win a national title if they do. And he's has great success. Spencer Rattler, because he's a quarterback, and Sam Howell, North Carolina, would be in this mix. He could go number one overall. But the guy I would bet on going number one overall, and I think is hands down the best player in this draft, and who was the best player coming out of high school, is Kayvon Thibodeau. What more can you ask of a defensive end? Myles Garrett went number one. Mario Williams went number one. Jadeveon Clowney went number one. We had those, even Courtney Brown back in the day. So I think there's a great opportunity for Thibodeau to have a phenomenal year. He's a great kid. He works on his game. And if you don't need a quarterback, you take Kayvon Thibodeau. And maybe it's going to be Houston, and they would look at a quarterback. But if you want the best player in this draft, I think it's going to be Thibodeau, lock, stock, and barrel.
Well, Mel, you mentioned the Texans could be one of those teams picking early in the draft next year. Here's a look at the teams that have the highest chance of a top 5 pick in next year's draft. This is according to ESPN's Football Power Index. The Texans, who you mentioned, top of the list with a 66% chance, followed by the Lions and the Jets. Again, this is for a top 5 pick in the 2022 NFL draft. Reminder, Philly has up to 3 first-round picks. They're also on this list. So, Guy, as we look forward to the college football season ahead and the prospects that Mel just mentioned, which player are you most excited about?
It's Kayvon Thibodeau out of Oregon, a defensive end. I've watched him since high school. He originally started at Susan Miller Dorsey High, where I went. Then he went to Oaks Christian. So I've been following his entire career. The one thing that concerns me about him is developing a pass rush move. He hasn't gotten there quite. If he does, he could be a double-digit sack guy. But like Mel said, is he more Courtney Brown or is he more Myles Garrett? We don't know yet. He needs to develop into that, and I think he will at some point in time. He's a fine young man. He plays a little high at times. He's not afraid to take on the blockers on the run game. But on the pass side of things, Swagoo, he needs to develop some pass rush moves for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And his quickness lends itself to that key, but you're absolutely right. You see him using a lot of speed, the power, especially the rip, dip, and rip move around the corner. And listen, for what he does it at a very high level. But to your point, when you get to the NFL, man, you're going to have to figure out how to go around guys, set up offensive linemen, and that's the challenge for every D lineman coming out of college. But he has the skill set and the tools to get it done. I want to talk about Derek Stingley Jr., though. And y'all know he's my LSU guy. And I want to see this dude back healthy. Last year, he didn't play as much as he played his freshman year. And he wasn't – remember this, too. A lot of times this guy will be judged on the few plays that he gets on his side. People always have to remember, when you have these type of elite-level corners, the numbers don't talk about how good of a player they are because people stay away from them. He was fortunate a couple years ago to have Christian Fulton on the other side, who was another top-tier corner, so people had to pick their poison, and he had a successful year with numbers. So Stingley Jr. coming back, he's a 6'1 corner. I said when he left LSU, he would be the best ever. Did not foresee his sophomore year going like it went. But I expect fully for him to, like, clearly, no one else close to assert himself as the number one cornerback coming out of the draft. And this is why I love to hear when Mel puts these guys on this big board. Because the way we look at the draft is not always about who the best guy is. It's sometimes about what team is picking in these first 3 to 4 to 5 picks. Like we had the conversation, Kyle Pitts was the best player in the draft last year. But Kyle Pitts ain't a quarterback, and Kyle Pitts fell to a team that already had a quarterback. I'm looking forward to seeing the defense reassert themselves in the first round. I was very disappointed in Mel's big boy last year.
You'll be happy this year, Marcus, because DeMarvin Leal is another kid out of Texas A&M. He's talking about developing secondary moves. He needs a finish, and he will get more sacks. And DeMarvin Leal from Texas A&M will be right there, possibly, Marcus, with Thibodeau. And you're going to have a Kyle Hamilton, the safety at Notre Dame, way up there. There's going to be a lot of defensive players in this draft in the top 10. Certainly, a lot of questions. You could see 6 corners go in the first round. So I think it will be that type of draft. The quarterbacks always get forced up, as you guys know. Rattler's in a pretty good position. He's got a lot of talent around him. Sam Howell, though, at North Carolina. Looks like the next Baker Mayfield. He lost Javonte Williams, Michael Carter, 2 top running backs, and Daz Newsome, and De'Ami Brown, 2 top receivers. How does he deal with those losses in North Carolina with the Tar Heels and Mack Brown for Sam Howell to maintain that high grade and challenge Spencer Rattler, or even a Malik Willis at Liberty? Could be a guy, a dual threat quarterback, had a phenomenal year at Liberty. Now he's back for year 2. He puts up the numbers he did last year, both running and passing. Don't sleep on him as well in terms of the top part of the first round.
Yeah, Sam Howell has
What about Slovis,
Do we have time
man?
To ask a question?
Where's Slovis at?
Go ahead, Swagoo. Have at it. Why not?
I just wanted to ask Mel. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead and ask a key question, Mel.
Yeah, Slovis is one of about 6-7 quarterbacks, key, you could put in there. He's the same grade as a Carson Strong at Nevada, Jaden Daniels, Arizona State, Desmond Ridder, Cincinnati. There's a lot of quarterbacks vying for that 3rd-4th spot after even Malik Willis isn't guaranteed at Liberty. He's got to do what he did this past year, do it again this season. If he does, he's at 3. That 4th spot is wide open. Like I said, there's JT Daniels at Georgia's in that mix. So if he has a year, I'm still a little questioning the 3 games against weak competition. Cincinnati Bearcats should have beat them. That game was mismanaged late, more from the coaches than the players. So I think when you look at the quarterbacks, it is a solid group. After that top 3, Slovis is in that mix to maybe be a first-round pick. McShay, much higher on Slovis right now than I am, but I like Slovis. I just want to see him show that he's elite this year and maybe be above and beyond maybe what we've seen so far.
If you want to watch Sam Howell, by the way, one of the quarterbacks that Mel is high on, you can do so tomorrow night on ESPN, 6 p.m. Eastern time. No one loves a shameless plug more than I do.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, time now to read and react. We read or listen and then react. And we start in Green Bay, where GM Brian Gutekunst was asked about both his relationship with quarterback Aaron Rodgers and the recent roster reduction. Take a listen.
I've had really good conversations throughout camp with Aaron and Matt, and I think the communication has been really, really good. And so as we went into this kind of decision-making period, I think everybody, all the people that are kind of involved in that were very aware of what was going on and why we were doing what we were doing. So I feel really good about that. And the conversations that I've had with Aaron have been excellent.
Sure sounds like the Packers general manager, Brian Gutekunst, there was keeping Aaron Rodgers debriefed what was happening, unlike what's happened in the past. And that's all you can really ask at this point in time. The fact that there has been, in the words of Brian Gutekunst, excellent communication so far through training camp. Packers clearly have prioritized that, put an emphasis on it, and that's their best hope to try to see if they can convince Aaron Rodgers to stay after this season.
Jeffy, it is the story that will not go away. While the Packers are the favorites in the NFC North, new Lions quarterback Jared Goff says, don't sleep on Detroit this year. Here's what he had to say.
It's, you know, a new regime, a new staff. They weren't very good last year. I mean, it's a whole new thing, and I understand it. But just like every other team in this league, there's expectations, and I don't know what the stat is, but every year there's new teams in the playoff. Every year there's teams that were in the playoff last year that aren't. And, you know, why not us? Why can't we be that one that wasn't in last year that is this year? And, again, it starts 1 week at a time, but internally our expectations are as high as anyone else.
Yeah, I hate to do my guy Aaron Glenn and Dan Campbell this way, but Jared Goff, I understand what you're doing, big guy. You're my guy and everything, but yeah, you won't be making it to the playoffs this year. You got a long ways to go. You got to retool that system, get new players and new blood in there. And much like you said, they weren't very good last year, and you're not going to be very good this year.
He's calling it like he sees it. All right, so the Raiders are looking to get over the hump this season. Maybe they can be that team that makes the jump into the playoffs. And after an 8-8 year last year, GM Mike Mayock is not hiding from the pressure.
We've assembled 53 players. We think we're going to be a pretty good football team. We're not hiding from expectations. I think John and I would both tell you that we feel like we need to be a playoff team this year. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. And you guys are all going to put that in your headlines, and I understand it. But we're not, I mean, that's what the expectation is. We think we've done the infrastructure work necessary to put us in position, and we got to take care of business.
So the Raiders have shown some improvement under John Gruden, especially on the offensive side of the ball, but their defense has struggled mightily, allowing 25-plus points per game in each of the last three seasons. In fact, no team in the NFL has allowed more points per game than the Raiders since Gruden took over all the way back in 2018. All right, Swagoo, they've made small steps, but how much better does this defense need to be to actually get the Raiders over the hump and make the playoffs that have been so elusive for them recently?
Listen, Phil, Babyface, they gotta make a jump, man. And I don't know if it's middle of the pack, because look, they have an offense. The Las Vegas Raiders have an offense that can compete with almost every team in this league, and that's why I don't understand all of the Derek Carr slander. But when you look at how they play defense and the plays that they gave up on the back end, they have to get better. Mullins have to get better. They drafted Morey out of TCU as safety to get better. Abram has to stay on the field. Like, it was at times now, this is coming from a Dallas Cowboy fan. It was at times where I thought the Raiders was point shape. I ain't know what the hell they was doing defensively. Like, it felt like they didn't even realize you could throw the football in the NFL. with how bad they were on the back end. But they bring in Yannick. They got Max Crosby. I think they missed on Cleveland Farrell, and I hate to say that. But you drafted Cleveland Farrell to come in there and be your answer for getting rid of slipping my mind. Come on, Key, help me out.
Khalil Mack. Man, how you going to forget that?
I know, bro. Listen, it's been a lot today. Anyway, you drafted Cleveland Farrell to come in and bring that production back up to a level and thought you had a guy that could get to the quarterback, and he has not delivered. So you got to go out and sign Yannick, who can rush the passer, who is one of those guys that can get after the quarterback. So if this defense is improved, they have a legitimate shot. But here's the thing the Raiders have to be careful of, and John Gruden as well. When Denver finds a quarterback, and they're good enough now with Teddy Bridgewater, but yes, if Denver finds a quarterback that plays at an elite level, like a high level to carry a team, they're going to fall so far back in their own division, they ain't going to have to worry about no playoffs. They're going to have to worry about trying to win a game in the division that they're in. So hopefully this defense is markedly improved, because I think Derek Carr and that offense has what it takes to make a playoff run.
To your judgment, Marcus, it really is. Everything's got to come together. Mike Mayock knows that, and John knows it. You mentioned Cleveland Farrell, okay, as a bust. It's a key guy. They can move him more inside. They think with his height and his wingspan, he can be disruptive along the interior, and he's shown that. He hasn't finished, but he's gotten some rush on the quarterback. If they can do that with Ngakoue now opposite Crosby, and you added Quentin Jefferson, Farrell becomes a key entity this year. If he can step up, and John's always said he wants that size, that height along the interior and at the middle linebacker spot. That's what affects quarterbacks the most. Farrell, to me, is key. And then you go to the back end. They drafted multiple DBs in the first round, second round, and from that point on, all these young guys, they got to start, number one, stay healthy, and Gus Bradley's got to coach them up. They've drafted DBs and defensive linemen, and particularly Farrell, okay, and Crosby. Remember, Crosby was your Farrell was a bust. Crosby they hit on in round four.
Yeah.
Give him credit for that. Crosby was a great fourth-round pick. Farrell, to me, as an interior presence, batting down passes, being disruptive. Sacks are a little overrated, but can you get the pressures? If he can do that, and they can't fade in the second half of the season. They have faded big time down the stretch 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
They open up with Lamar. Then they got Big Ben. Then they got Tua Herbert. You mentioned Denver after the Bears. That's a tricky start to the season for the Las Vegas Raiders. They got to win games. They have to be a playoff team. And I think at the end of the day, we're going to look back and say the young DBs, but in particular, Farrell up front, can he pick it up? If he can't and he's a bust, that defense, I think, will be no better than they have been the last couple of years.
All right, so, Key, it's clear there's a lot of pressure on this organization, but how much of that pressure falls specifically on the shoulders of head coach John Gruden?
I think why are you laughing, Adam?
Why does that question go to you?
Right? But I think a lot of pressure falls on Coach Gruden. And, you know, you think about it. They were headed in the right direction under Jack Del Rio. I know they had a struggling bit of a start, and then all of a sudden they decided that they were going to move on from Jack. That's fine. John comes in off of television. It's all about John. It's $100 million, 10 years. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to blow things up. I want to do it the way I want to, and that's okay. Coaches have the obligation to do it if that's what they want to do. You give them that right. So far, not so good. And I think it's not necessarily the pressure, it's the stress level of being able to put a team together to compete like he did with us at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He wants to erase that stigma about him that's out there that we only won a Super Bowl with Coach Dungy's team. Whether he would ever admit that or not, I know deep down inside, John wants that to go away. And he can do it. He can do it, but he's got it. One thing I would give him advice for, stop messing with the offensive line. You cannot keep changing offensive linemen every single year with different combinations when you have an offense that can score points. I just don't get it, Adam. I really don't.
Well, Keith, they have shown incremental improvements year to year to year to year. They just haven't gotten to the point where they would be really happy and comfortable. I think that means more than anything right now for John Gruden. You saw the graphic that Mel put up of all the first and second round draft picks they have on defense. They add KJ Wright, the former Seahawks linebacker today, who used to play for Gus Bradley in Seattle, will now go join him in Las Vegas. This is a team that has thrown an awful lot of resources into its defense. They've knocked at the door. This is the time for this team to come through. The problem is, good luck in a division where you've got Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert. Good luck with that for the next 10 years. John Gruden has a 10-year contract.
It's a good thing.
When you've got two monsters like that at quarterback, it's going to be very hard on a yearly basis to go make the playoffs.
If I was John and I'm there after this season, the one thing I would do, Phil and Adam, and this is not a knock on Mayock, I would go get me a guy that's a personnel guy, and I would coach the team and go find me a dude that really is a general manager in this league. And it's not a knock on Mayock. I understand
it. Why not Mike?
But, well, I'm talking about somebody I'd go find because, in my opinion, Adam, they haven't hit on players that they've been drafting outside of Colton Miller and Jacobs. Who have they hit on?
Well, they've certainly had a lot left to be done, and as we've talked about, the incremental progress is okay. They have a long way to go. ESPN Football Power Index gives them just a 17% chance to make the playoffs. What do you got, Swaggy? Last word here. We got to go.
But they better not lose that foothold to the Denver Broncos, or it's over.
No,
I'm telling you. They
imagine.
Better figure out how to get in that third spot.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Amid speculation, the Dolphins are one of the teams on a short list to have interest in a trade of Deshaun Watson, or for Deshaun Watson. Miami head coach Brian Flores affirmed that the team remains committed to Tua Tagovailoa as its starter.
I will say that Tua is our quarterback. I think he's had a good training camp. I think he's made a lot of progress. I think he's made a lot of improvement. We're pleased with where he is, and he's going about his preparations for New England the way he should be, and that's where we are as a team.
All right, let's dive into Miami more with Shefty. What can you tell us about the current quarterback situation with the Dolphins?
Well, Phil, first, I wish you could pronounce Tua's name correctly, but once we get past I think Brian Flores is saying exactly what he should be saying, which is that Tua is our quarterback. What else do you want to say? Of course, at various points during the offseason, there were going to be teams that made inquiries to the Houston Texans, who so far haven't been willing to trade Deshaun Watson away as his legal situation and the parallel investigations unfold with the FBI, Houston Police Department, and the National Football League. And in the interim, the Dolphins like what they've seen from Tua this summer. He's impressed them. It's time for him to go up against Mac Jones in the regular season opener, his former college teammate in Foxborough next Sunday. But right now, Brian Flores, the Dolphins head coach, is handling the situation exactly as he should be.
All right, so Swaggy, let me get your thoughts on how this has all transpired. It's not been mixed messaging publicly from Brian Flores. He has been clear that Tua is their guy. But because there's been so much noise and speculation around Miami and their potential interest in Deshaun Watson, do you think it has the chance to become a problem for Tua's confidence?
I don't, babyface, in this because I've known Tua and kind of his demeanor and the way he carries himself since he was at Alabama. Look, this kid, man, he's the right guy that you want leading your franchise. Now, that doesn't mean it's a lot of great guys that are leaders that can't play a lick of football. We've been key, been in locker rooms with them. But that doesn't take away the fact that they good dudes and they can lead. But I believe Tua can be a high-level quarterback in the NFL. And I could be absolutely wrong, but if we are going to take a sample size of a guy that's only thrown 540-something-odd passes and determine if he can play quarterback or not in this league, while being interchanged in and out with Ryan Fitzpatrick, we done lost our damn mind as football analysts, pundits, people that talk about the game. I want to give Tua an opportunity to be the starter, to go through one through four quarters of a football game for an extended period of time to determine if he can be the leader of this team. I think he can be.
Mel, let's look backwards before we look forward. I want to ask you about what your take was on Tua coming out of the draft and where you see him going forward.
He's right there with Herbert. Now, I think that's the thing. Herbert's had great success. Tua's coming now back from the injury, 2 years removed from that hip injury. That means your arm strength will be better. Everything's going to be better with Tua, provided the offensive line gets the job done. Tua's had injury issues. Can they keep him upright for this long 17-game season? Will Myles Gaskin be able to give him the running game they need? Mike Gesicki's a heck of a target. And Jaylen Waddle is a key guy, not just as his receiver, but as a punt returner to help in terms of field position. But for Tua, for me, the schedule is tricky early. There's some winnable games. It could be 2-3, 3-2 after five games. We'll see. But I'm a Tua believer. I just think the offensive line for Miami is the iffy part of that football team going in.
Key last word.
The thing that scares me is how everything is constructed on the offensive side from a coaching staff standpoint. You got co-offensive coordinators talking to him. You got a quarterback coach talking to him. You can confuse the young man.
A big year ahead in Miami. We're back tomorrow here on NFL Live. Same time, same place.